Welcome back to The Digital Dive, a conversation about tech. My name is Jacqueline. I'm one of your hosts.
And my name is Darsh. I am your other host. Now, this week, we're talking about a ton of stuff. First off, we're talking about Tesla chargers for non-Teslas, Netflix games. We're also going to talk about MacBook Pro reviews, as well as Facebook's huge rebrand and the metaverse as a whole.
It's going to be a stacked episode. If you like what you hear, make sure you hit the follow button on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and make sure that you get notified every new episode. And it also helps us get the podcast out to more people. Thank you so much. We really appreciate it. And let's roll the intro.
All right. So Jacqueline, I don't know if you've known this, but I was definitely surprised. So Tesla is now letting non-Tesla EV users use their supercharger network for the first time ever.
So what was it before? Because I feel like Tesla's always had this offer open on the table for companies to use the network.
So Tesla's always had the opportunity for any electric vehicle manufacturer to use their proprietary technology to set up as their charger. So if you were to create an electric car right now, you would be able to go onto Tesla's website or contact Tesla and get the design schematics and everything to design your chargers, your charging port on your new electric car to work with the Tesla supercharger network so that you'd be pretty much going to Tesla superchargers to charge up instead of like Electrify America, Electrify Canada, wherever you may be. So that was always the original deal. But now Tesla's letting non-Tesla EV users use their supercharger network, like actually use it without having to have the companies involved with it at all. So now it's just making it kind of not backwards compatible, but effectively making it so that anyone could use a Tesla supercharger station.
So how does that work? Like, do the cars have to have the system for it? Or how is this different than what it was before?
So before it was say for Ford, for example, the Ford Mustang Mach-E. So the charging port on the Mach-E is an Electrify America, standardized charging port, whereas the Tesla charging ports are different. The Tesla chargers are different. So pretty much the only way to use the supercharger would be to have an adapter to make it accessible to you. So what Tesla wants to do is create these adapters that can they pretty much want to create adapters that would be available and accessible to everyone so that they could choose when they go to a supercharger station if they want to charge off a Tesla's chargers versus Electrify America, which I feel like you'd kind of be, I don't want to say dumb, but not the brightest to go to Electrify America right now if you have a supercharger next to you.
So would you have to buy this adapter? Or how would it work?
So right now, they're looking at creating a pilot program. So this is something that hasn't actually initiated yet. They haven't actually had this start. Where they want to start it initially, I believe, is going to be in European countries. And that's mostly because in Europe, there's a standardized charging cable connectors that are mandatory for everyone. So other European countries will probably follow suit. There's been a huge product. We talked about this on the podcast actually weeks ago, them standardizing charging connectors in the EU. So if you have an iPhone, there was the rumors of getting USB Type-C, but that's now just been completely dismissed because everyone's no, they're just going to bring MagSafe in. And MagSafe isn't a charging cable. It's a wireless charger. So that was pretty much something they did with phones, but it's supposed to be uniform throughout. So it's going to be the same thing with electric vehicles. So they're saying is what Elon Musk has been indicating towards, that they're going to start this experiment in Europe, probably going to start out in Netherlands, where they're going to be 10 different supercharging stations where you can go to and use the Tesla superchargers. And you won't need an adapter or anything because it'll already be accessible for everyone.
Interesting. Okay. I've read online the people that were more hesitant about this were saying that they think that one of the main selling points of the Teslas are the superchargers and the fact that because there aren't tons of Tesla users, you don't often have to wait a long period of time to charge your car. And some people were worried that with this update, it will now be harder for Tesla users to charge their car without the congestion. So that's one of the things that they're going to test out in the pilot program, supposedly, to see how much this increases influx and if they have to make more superchargers. But definitely a really interesting move. It feels net positive.
At the end of the day, Tesla has been one of those companies that have been very, very vocal about how they want to really create as much clean energy in the world as possible and want to be able to offer clean energy sources to everyone. And so Tesla has been boosting up their supercharger network everywhere. Everywhere is getting huge bumps in their supercharger network. They're getting multiple new supercharging stations. So I think as a whole, when it comes to Tesla, it's going to be really cool to see how this kind of plays out. And it's not even just using the supercharger network now, it's also going to be home chargers that work with other EVs as well. So apparently there was a random drop that there was going to be Tesla was launching a new at-home wall charger on the Netherlands website. allowing non-Tesla EVs to charge at supercharger stations.
Interesting. Yeah, dude, Tesla's one of those companies that's absolutely fascinating to me, and they're far and away the best, most sophisticated charging network. And because of that, they're the easiest electric car to recommend. And this feels like a very interesting step forward. It'll be interesting to see how if it expands in the US and what happens, and if it changes the value prop of Teslas. I think if the charging network is available for a lot of other electric vehicles, maybe people will buy that instead of a Tesla. Because one of the common complaints with Tesla is that the actual car has some flaws, right? Like, there are often like aesthetic finish issues because they're still a pretty new company. So it'll be interesting if like a Ford can now swoop in with this electrify, with like the ability to use superchargers and have more people buy that car.
Oh, absolutely. There's a ton of manufacturing issues that they have from Tesla. And like Tesla, you'll notice it mostly on the lower end models, but then sometimes you even notice it on like the higher ones. But Tesla has been, though they've been very notorious for this in the past, they've been actually getting very, very good at like the production side of things as of late, because Tesla has put a lot more energy into that rather than just the innovation. So like a family friend of mine got a Model S Plaid, and so far from what I've heard, there haven't been any actual issues with the car itself and its production. Like there aren't very many like huge gaps in panels and stuff like that. So I feel like they're getting better, but you're right. Like if Ford were to come into this space and be like, and wanted to take over now, and having Tesla supercharger network, it would be insane. And specific with the supercharger that they're selling at home, to clarify, like this is not being sold in America, but it's using the standard J1772 connector, not the Tesla proprietary one, because it's all unified in the EU. So if you wanted to buy it from the EU and bring it to North America, you probably actually could. And because it's competitively priced at $415, it's effectively a Gen 2 Tesla home charger that you can get for your normal EV, like for any other EV in the space, which is insane.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm excited about this. I feel like Tesla is just such a cool company to follow. They often don't follow the things that you think a company has to do. Like they're constantly innovating in the space and trying out new things, like getting rid of like the paid marketing and Elon being so vocal on social media. Like they have a lot of untraditional company things as we move into this new like market and using the internet and things like that. So in a very bad transition here, I'm going to shift us over to something that happened with Netflix this week, which is that Netflix is officially launching an Apple Arcade competitor, kind of. What do you think about this?
Okay, so for one, like when I first saw this, I was kind of more confused about how this is going to work. But I imagine it's pretty much going to be like you can just download it off of like a Netflix games app store, which is going to be kind of interesting. So like that's at least the way that they plan on running it through like Android. So right now this is only available on Android. It's going to be like a full access. You can play any games like that are available on there. They have a ton of really cool ones coming out, like Stranger Things 1984, Stranger Things, The Game, Shooting Hoops, Card Blast, Teeter Up, all these different games. So I feel like there's going to be it's going to be pretty cool to see. I'm actually very excited about it.
So yeah, it feels like a very interesting move because with Squid Game being such a massive success, which is, if anyone doesn't know, that new show that Netflix came out with, and obviously there are a ton of games in there, and there's a huge opportunity, obviously, to bring that experience digital and to have everyone that watched the games participate in them in an online digital way, like to create a world. And Mr. Beast has done this where he launched an app, right, that was a game, and then it was huge, number one app on the App Store. People obviously want to be involved, and as audiences move to being more international, you want to create digital experiences versus just like physical. So it makes a lot of sense for Netflix to do this, and I think that there's potentially a lot of money in it as well, and especially if they continue Squid Game, which I think they obviously will because it was so successful. I think that they could really harness the attention that they're getting and put it into an app, and applications and games can kind of be very lucrative. So it's a really interesting move, and it makes a lot of sense to kind of also like expand the world. So you watch the show and then you can be part of the show through the game, like Stranger Things. That seems like a really cool move.
No, you're absolutely right too. Like with something like Squid Game, like I feel like I feel like those games, at least to me, I don't feel like aren't very enticing, but maybe it's just me. I'm not very interested by the games that they did play, except for the last one. Wait, Jacqueline, did you ever watch Squid Game? Did you finish it?
So I watched the first episode and I found it like really disturbing because I cannot watch anything like horror movie-esque or like murder graphic stuff.
Yeah, it's very gore.
Yeah, so I made it through like I think 40 minutes and I was like, nope. But I watched like a ton of breakdowns. So I saw a lot of the games, but like I think the main one that people know is like Red Light, Green Light, mm-hmm. which was in the first episode. And they could like gamify that, like keep your finger on the app and then release your finger like when red light is said.
Yeah, that could be something, or even could be even more interesting to see, like, the last game, it was like a bridge with glass and you had to choose between the right bridge or the left bridge. And the one of them had fake glass, one of them had real glass, and real glass would shatter. It was tempered glass versus real glass, and the tempered glass is more secure, so you can actually put weight on it, versus normal glass, which would just shatter. So I feel like that would be a really cool game. Actually, I would play that. That's kind of cool. And it'd be like never ending, kind of like Subway Surfers or something like that. Like, that would be cool.
Yeah, that would be cool. And I feel like there's definitely a way to animate that. Yeah, I'm excited. What do you think, like, when you look at traditional media, like a Netflix, and then you look at someone like Mr. Beast, which is easily able to harness attention and like also move really quickly. Like, he created an app in like 6 months. Why do you think companies like Netflix don't move as quickly to do stuff like this? Like, Mr. Beast right now is producing Squid Game, like his own YouTube version. He's going to get it done probably in a couple months, whereas it took them like a much longer period of time to produce it. And they obviously have a lot more significant budgets. What do you think the barrier is there for traditional media? Is it that they are more risk adverse or something else?
I think there's a lot more to it than that. I feel like, well, for one, production, to actually run a production like Mr. Beast versus running a production of an actual production company are two different things entirely. Mr. Beast doesn't have to abide by 90% of the labor laws that are available in the States when it comes to doing, like, we're creating or putting out any media, because it's all going out online and on YouTube. So the only guidelines he has to follow, technically speaking, are all just YouTube guidelines. Given, like, he probably still pays everyone, like, it does everything the right way, but he isn't held back by the restrictions that are in, like, the media space, like the media industry. If you're trying to produce a show and you're trying to put it on Netflix, for example, you're gonna have a lot more in your way before you're actually able to get it started. Whereas, like, Mr. Beast could just decide one day, like, yeah, I want to do a Squid Game thing and I want to run that myself, so I'm gonna do it. And then he'd be like, okay, I want to book out these 3-4 days. There's no scheduling conflicts. He also has he's also much lower production quality than these shows. Like, these shows have full crews. He has a couple of cameras set up with a couple of cameramen and like some audio guys. That's about it. It's a very low key. It's more low key.
Well, he's building all the sets though.
Oh,
like, it's still going to be millions of dollars.
Oh no, absolutely. So it'll still be very, very expensive, but at the same time, like, it's not going to be, I feel like it's comparing YouTube to Netflix. Like, the content will never be the same in terms of quality. Like, it could be, the story could be the same, like, the story could be as good or even better. But I would say, like, production quality wise, like, getting full movie level quality takes time. Even for something as long as like 20, 30 minutes will take a long time to do.
Yeah, that's valid. And there's also like sound mixers and all this stuff. But I think intentionally, I was actually just giving a guest lecture earlier in the week, and I was talking a lot about how Mr. Beast had said in an interview we did a while back that he intentionally will shoot on like a lower quality camera or do these things to make the video feel much more authentic, because one of the reasons that people come to YouTube is for the authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
So like, he could match Netflix's quality if he wanted to, but he purposely doesn't.
Also, just like another thing I also just realized as well, like, these are actors versus like real people. So like, he's making a real Squid Game versus Squid Game, that's the show, true, which has been true, scripted, and like there's actual script for the actors to memorize, and like, they have to take multiple takes, and each day is a different set and a different thing. This is literally like you're not worrying about, like, Squid Game wasn't just, and spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't seen it, it wasn't literally just games back to back episodes. It was, there's a lot of in between like drama and character development that you saw throughout the show.
True.
Like, that also,
yeah,
plays,
I didn't think about that.
That also plays a huge role into it. So like, I feel like Mr. Beast could definitely do it very quick. I feel like Mr. Beast tried to make a story like Squid Game, it would take him time to do 10 episodes at 50, 60 minutes a piece and like decent quality, good story, and like actually like acting. I think it would still take him a decent amount of time.
Yeah, that's 100% valid. Interesting.
I was gonna say, just back to the Netflix of it all, like, Netflix might take longer to put out games and stuff like this. They may have taken more time because, at least in this situation, this is the global rollout of a brand new service that they're bringing, right? Like, they have to make sure that this actually has the greatest value prop ever, or else they're not gonna be able to capture that market. And like, an app market is already so, so hectic. I can only imagine what it's gonna be like here.
Yeah. And it kind of ties into like us talking about in the last episode, or maybe not last episode, like a few episodes ago, the open market on iOS and Android, and like if they're going to have to offer another app store aside from like Google Play. And if that ends up happening, if that regulation passes, then I think we could see a lot more of this, because the game industry is huge, and especially the mobile game industry is only going to get bigger.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, like, think about Google, right? Like, Google came out with their version, like Strata, or was it Stadia?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Stadia. Okay, yeah. So I thought, yeah, it was Stadia. But regardless, going back to that, it's like Google Stadia came out as a cloud-based gaming service developed and operated by Google, literally to give people the opportunity to game on different smartphones and different devices. So it was like it was its own different thing that stood out from everyone else. But Jack, where I pose a question to you is like, with Google Stadia, is this something that you would find interesting? As someone who's not, like, I feel like you're not a huge gamer, right?
I'm definitely not. Yeah, I am. I can count on my hand the amount of times I've gamed, right? Like, when I was younger, I used to play, I forget what it's called, but it's like one of the racing games.
Need for Speed?
It's like...
Asphalt?
Like Mario's in it, maybe, or maybe Sonic's in it.
Mario Kart?
Yeah, Mario Kart.
Oh my
Mario
God. Kart, how do you not know Mario Kart, right? Like, off the top of your head, what? That's like, it's like the most standard, like, racing game that you play as a kid. Like, what?
Yeah, so I used to play that as a kid, but I obviously didn't play it that much because I forgot the name. But yeah, so I'm definitely not the biggest gamer in the world. So to me, it's not as appealing, but I did get an Apple Arcade subscription and I've been like toying with some of those games because I find for B-roll shots, watching someone game can be a little engaging. So I've been trying to play like some NBA 2K or whatever it's called.
How is that actually on Apple Arcade?
I have not played it enough to know. Like I just played in the B-roll shots. So like I'm just like shooting and running up and down the court, but I've like never like leveled up or like tried to like strategically like make my team. But the graphics are good. That's kind of the only thing I can comment on. I'm not sure like how the gameplay compares.
Okay. That's fair enough. Okay. Well, that's good to know. But at least when it comes to like Google Stadia, like I feel like that appeals more to you, right? Rather than like going to, it would appeal more to you to use Google Stadia or Netflix games or Apple Arcade than to go out and buy an Xbox.
Totally. Yeah. You know, I got a PS4 like many years ago from Colorware, mm-hmm. and it was pretty cool. But yeah, I'm just like I kind of feel like the amount of time that I would need to put in to like get good at games is so significant. And I don't know if it's worth it. But I also like know that people love playing video games and like it seems like a good release. So it could be, but I also like know myself and I feel like I might like get addicted to it and like really want to get good. And I just don't want to waste that time.
Honestly, that's so.
Yeah, I don't know.
Honestly, it's genuinely so fair. And like one of the things with like playing any video game is that it gives you achievements and challenges where you can like reach and aspire to reach those goals that you want to hit. And you know what? Speaking of goals, guys, we set a goal for this podcast to hit 150 ratings on Apple Podcasts before the end of the year. Now, if we hit this goal, we plan on doing a live chat with all of the Digital Dive listeners to answer questions and just to generally just celebrate having a great year hitting 150 ratings. So help us hit this goal by rating us now while we take a quick break to grab some cold brew, or in my case, a nice warm shot of espresso because it became freezing cold in Ontario this week. And when we come back, we're going to talk a ton more about the MacBook Pro as well as Facebook's huge rebranding, plus a little bit on the metaverse.
All right, welcome back from the break, guys. We're about to just start talking about the MacBook Pro reviews that have come out this week. But before we do, I want to give a shout out to Dom. He just rated the podcast on Monday. He said, love the pace and the depth of the unbiased analysis. Keep growing. Dom, because of this review, we can continue to grow. So thank you so much. Really means the world that you listened to the podcast and left us a review.
Thank you so much, Dom. Really, really appreciated. And you know what? Something else I really, really appreciated? The notch on the new MacBook Pros. Controversial? Yes, I know. But I kind of really like it. And I'm not going to lie about that. But Jack, and I want to hear your thoughts first. I feel like you actually might have been playing around with one already.
I haven't. I am on the edge of buying one, oh but it goodness. Feels like a bad use of money. Yeah. Dude, it's so expensive. I just bought a new computer. Like, I'd rather invest the money in like growing the team and the content and stuff, but I really want it. Like, it just looks so good. And Marquez posted his AirPods review and he edited 8K footage on the computer and it exported faster than his Mac Pro. So that to me was like, oh my God. Like, I can't even imagine what that would do for my workflow.
Oh, honestly, I can only imagine what it would do for like my just general day-to-day workflow. Like, have you seen those TikToks where people just open up every single app on the MacBook Pro all at once?
No, I haven't.
It's literally a trend for everyone who's bought the new MacBook Pro, whether it's the Pro or the Max M1. What they'll do is they'll click all of the apps on their Finder and then press Commando and open all of them like concurrently. And there's no lag, there's no glitch, nothing. Just they all open. My bigger concern is how in the world do they close it? Like do they just turn off their computer like to close all the apps at once? Like what would you do in that situation? God. Because yeah. You just open everything. There's like 80 apps. But they did it all instantaneously. Like, I have no idea how Apple was able to accomplish this. It's absolutely absurd.
It's kind of wild. Yeah, like how good it is. It's so exciting. And I also, I really am a fan of the build. Like I didn't know how I'd feel about it because it's much thicker and boxier, but I think it looks so good. Like, it just looks professional.
Mm-hmm. So I don't mean to brag or anything. So I had the opportunity to like play with one for like 5 minutes.
Ooh, where?
So actually my roommate's cousin came up to visit for Halloween weekend, and he actually recently got one. He got a 14-inch, and he's a huge tech guy. So we were FaceTiming before he came up, and he told me he had it. I was like, I have to see it when you come here. And he's like, yeah, absolutely. So when he gets here, I'm like, okay, I need to see this Mac. Like, I need to see it right now. He pulls out the computer and I just take a look at it, and I was freaking out. Like, I was absolutely freaking out. For one, okay, the pads underneath the computer itself, like the pads that raise it, genuinely big. Like, you can see that, you can visibly see them in the body of the computer now. Like, it's not understated at all. It's like part of the design. It's very blatantly there. And I don't know how I feel about that, to be very honest with you.
Yeah. Honestly, dude, the computer just feels like industrial to me, though. Like, so I kind of feel like it fits the industrial vibe. The engraving on the bottom kind of threw me for a loop a little bit, but I think I like it.
Oh, I love that. I think that looks sick. Like Apple, can you engrave iPhone like that into every single one of your iPhones? Like, seriously, like, that was genius. Like forget putting the Apple logo on things now. Like, literally just do an engraving. Like, engrave the name of the product into the product, and it feels so much more premium already.
Yeah, dude, I wonder like how, like if that adds to like the supply chain, like how much extra time that adds.
Honestly, I doubt it even takes that long. Cause like I can imagine this in the supply chain, like in the grand scheme of things, it would add an extra maybe like 5 minutes. Cause they would probably use diamond edge cutters, and it's already like, it's all automated into robots. So like cause it's not someone doing it by hand. It's literally like a machine. It's an order of operations. It's a process, right? So like goes into like, it comes out, the aluminum frame comes out fresh from the water or whatever that liquid is that they show every single time in the videos for like the perfect, for the perfect color. And then they probably just take like a diamond edged like Dremel or something, and they'll carve it in, and then they'll wipe it down, spray it down again, and then boom, moving forward. And I feel like in the respects of like a factory where they have like high end, like very fast paced machines that could do this, you'd probably be able to get that done like in and out pretty quick.
Yeah. I just feel like when companies are doing a supply chain, like they think about every single thing that adds like a second, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's fair. It's very fair.
So it's interesting though, and also it's kind of like, it's a cool little detail because most of the time you won't actually see it since it's on the bottom, which makes me appreciate even more that they did it, because I think it's just like a nice little touch.
Oh, absolutely. It's such a nice, just like extra little piece. But okay, besides like the engraving on the bottom, which I think was great. I loved it. But there was a ton of other cool stuff this year with the new MacBook Pro. And one of the things that I thought that a lot of people were going to to shit on pretty much was going to be the notch. And I'm not going to lie to you, like there's so many new workarounds on like using it that I feel like no one really cares that much. And maybe this is just my opinion from what I've seen, but like, you can set it up so that every time you open an app, it takes the entire control bar on top and puts the notch in there, or you can have it so that the notch stands out. So it's like, it's completely up to you. It's not like using your iPhone where like you always see the notch and it's always blatantly in your face, which I kind of really enjoy. I really, really appreciate that.
Yeah, I don't think it's like terrible, but I have seen some apps that are really poorly optimized for it. So to me, it feels like it was kind of a little unnecessary. But I also don't think it's terrible. Like there was Quinn Nelson posted like one app that was just like, it was hiding a lot in the menu bar underneath the notch. And he was like, this is just like dumb and like less usable. And also it doesn't really make sense to me that it's so big. I kind of feel like they did that. So then the next update, they can be like, and now we removed the notch. Like I think when you're designing a product, you have to constantly think about things not to introduce right away, so you can have areas to innovate on. Because if they made like the perfect computer, then they would have nothing to sell the next year. It's like planned obsolescence, I think.
Yeah.
Is that the word?
I feel like that almost sounds like planned adolescence, and like that's just adult, like planning adulthood. And I feel like that just doesn't.
Yeah, I was a whole different pronouncing it. Planned obsolescence. I don't know. Obsolescence. I have no idea how to pronounce it, guys. I'm not off the top of my game today.
Honestly, yo, it could very well be
it's
that.
It's obsolescence.
Like, I guess to make something like obsolete, right? Like the next year. Okay, that makes sense. And I could see that Apple would do that to try to like increase their profits, because like at some point they have to like redesign. But if it's any indication based on like previous years, when they stick out with a new MacBook Pro design, they don't change it for a couple of years, and you're stuck with that for a couple of years anyway. So like there'll be small incremental updates. Like I think after the first generation MacBook Pro 2016, the new update was, they actually didn't have anything for the next year. It was like 2 years later that they replaced the butterfly switches with the scissor switches, and then they went from the scissor switches. They brought in the escape button and the power button out of the touch bar, and then Yeah, that was pretty much all they did after they came out with the initial design. So I honestly wouldn't be surprised if we're stuck with that notch for the next 4 years, but I'm kind of here for it. So Apple, like, kind of keep it. I kind of really like it. I just like the idea of having a very thin bezel. Like the best, like when I was looking at this computer, like for one, ProMotion, insane on a computer, absolutely absurd. I was in love instantaneously. I'm pretty sure I wanted to marry it. Besides that, the keyboard as well, beautiful. Very, very nice to type on. It was also like full-sized. Like I felt like the keys were bigger for some reason. Are they bigger this year?
The function keys are definitely bigger because they got rid of the touch bar.
Okay, so maybe that's why I thought it was like actually more so like big.
Yeah, and also I love like the black undertone.
Oh my goodness. It was such an aesthetically pleasing like look. It does make it look a lot more industrial, but like I'm here for it. Like it looks so cool.
Totally agree with you. I'm stoked. And also the reviews seem really positive, which is like the first year in a long time for Apple products. For like an Apple Mac, I feel that the review is so positive. Like people are raving about it, which just makes me want it even more. But I don't think I'm going to get it yet. It will be interesting to see when they update the Mac Pro, like what the speeds will be on that. Because if this is what it's like in a laptop, I can only imagine in a Mac Pro.
Imagine a Mac Pro, right? With like, I want to say like 14 M1 Maxes all in there. Like, and I wouldn't even put it past them to do it just for overkill's sake.
Yeah, I mean, I could see it being incredibly fast. I don't think we're going to get that update for a while since they just updated the Mac Pro. But yeah, when that happens, it'll be so freaking sick. Like, it's mind-boggling to me that they've been able to make such drastic improvements.
No, we're going to see that next year.
You think so?
Well, they said that they want to have their entire lineup switch to like their own silicon by the end of 2022.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
So like, we have to see a new Mac Pro next year. Like, it has to happen. There's no way they can circumvent that because it's part of their lineup, right? And so I'd be excited to see more how their desktop computers perform, because I only imagine that like the raises underneath the bottom panel of the computer, like those little like felt pads, those are meant to help with airflow. So I can only imagine that's probably also to help keep the fans running lower at all times so they don't have to actually worry about it. But at the same time, like I can only imagine what like a desktop would have with like a proper like heat management system and what they could do with like an actual fan and like a proper setup, like an iMac Pro or an iMac, just generally like a 27-inch iMac. Holy, I'm so excited.
Yeah, dude, that's awesome. I feel like this has like been just like very positive in the media. Like there's not really anything bad to say about it. Cannot say the same thing for the Facebook rebrand.
Oh, perfect transition. I love that.
That did not go over well.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I'm glad you liked it. So Facebook, for anyone that doesn't know, rebranded its like parent company, kind of like what Google did with Alphabet, to Meta. And the reason for this rebrand, like the name comes from the metaverse, which Mark Zuckerberg is like super passionate about, thinks it's the future, wants Facebook to be at the forefront of it. Kind of relates to Web3 and NFTs, which we were talking about last week, like everything going digital and stuff. Darshan and I want to have a conversation about why they rebranded, what we think about it, and then also like what we think about the metaverse, because I don't necessarily think it's an amazing thing. Like if you think about the movie Ready Player One, where everyone's like in the room and like strapped on with a VR headset and living their entire life in a virtual world, that to me seems terrible and really scary, but I think there's a world in which the metaverse can exist and be a net positive. So Darsh and I just want to talk about that. And I'll throw it to you, Darsh, first. Like, what were your thoughts when you initially saw the rebrand? Were you surprised by the Meta, or were you like, yeah, this is to be expected?
Well, I mean, we talked about it like a couple of weeks ago on the podcast, actually. I think last episode or the one before that, we mentioned that Facebook had announced they were going to change their name at some point to Meta, like it was in the works. And then they finally did it. So like, I wasn't as surprised.
We didn't know it was going to be Meta, though. We just knew they were going to change their name.
Yeah, but there was like rumors of it being called Meta.
Yeah, that's true.
I thought that was like kind of like someone would put in like Alpha or Beta or Delta as like a placeholder. But I guess just like they decided to go with Meta. I actually tweeted this out and I thought it was the funniest thing that day. I was actually cracking up about it. I was like, wow, Facebook, you're so meta for changing your name to Meta. Like, I just thought it was funny.
Yeah, dude, now it's changed the word Meta now. Like now there's just a different meaning to it. You can't just like casually use it anymore.
It's semantic change. Every time you're talking about Meta, you're going to talk about privacy issues and stealing your data. Anywho, honestly, my thoughts, I don't really care. I'm very much at a point right now where I'm like trying to delete Facebook. I really want to delete Facebook. And the only reason I still keep it are like for my longtime friends my longtime friends and family from like across the world that I want to keep in touch with who still use Facebook like religiously. And like, I also use Messenger religiously, but if I could just get rid of Facebook as its own.
Really?
Oh yeah. I use Messenger for everything. All my friends and I.
What
from
do you use it for?
Messaging with my friends from high school, with courses in university. Like we'll have like course group chats where we can like brainstorm ideas after lectures and like talk about concepts that we're confused about and like ask for help. So we do that all through Facebook Messenger. And then through high school, we did the same thing. And all of my high school friends, like I communicate with them like almost primarily through Facebook Messenger at this point. I don't think I text any of them.
Interesting. Why not? Why wouldn't you use text?
I think it was in high school, like a lot of us had different phones. Like everyone, like no one had, not everyone had iMessage, not everyone had an Android. And we were all on Facebook all the time for everything anyway, because like all of our clubs had Facebook like groups, Facebook events. Like that's how we used Facebook for everything in high school. So we all just kind of stuck to that platform. So like one of my best friends of like all time, like literally my closest friends, I communicate with through Facebook for the most part, which is a little absurd. Like I have their numbers and they have iMessage, but I don't know what it is. We all just respond quicker on Facebook.
Yeah, that's interesting. I like don't use Facebook at all. That one was a pretty easy one for me to delete. The harder one for me to delete and like the one that I don't think I will is Instagram.
Very fair.
Which obviously is owned by Facebook, but it feels different. And I feel like everyone kind of feels that way, even though it's like the same thing.
Oh, absolutely. I think what's actually really crazy though about like Meta, like the changing their name is one thing, right? And changing the logo is one thing. But at the same time, it's like you can tell, it's very clear that Mark Zuckerberg wants a metaverse to be created. And
that he wants to be like at the forefront.
Yeah. And it's a little scary because like in a time right now where we're all kind of curious about where Mark Zuckerberg's loyalties lie in terms of its consumers and how much he's going to actually advocate for our privacy and for the protection of our individual information. I would be very, very interested to see if anyone would actually adopt like a metaverse created by Mark Zuckerberg. Like, I know like I would be very hesitant to do so, but I probably still would just because I know if you want to get into the metaverse, if everyone's going to end up in the metaverse at some point, then like you kind of have to get involved with it early on or else you're not going to have a stand.
That's what freaks me out.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude, that's like, it freaks me out that like there are just like a few companies that can like really shape our world. The metaverse becoming such a big thing like freaks me out a little bit. I think that especially because of the pandemic, like we experienced when our life was like fully online, like in lockdown. And I don't think it was the best for our mental health. Like real in-person interaction is essential. So I hope that it becomes something where it assists and adds to our life, but doesn't take it over.
I absolutely agree. Here's the thing, actually, my buddy messaged me yesterday and I thought it was a really interesting conversation topic because he sent me the Mark Zuckerberg. Have you seen like the thing? Like it was like Mark Zuckerberg looking at himself in the metaverse, like a split screen.
No, I haven't.
So it's literally like Mark Zuckerberg. He's standing in front of a screen and then on the screen is a virtual version of Mark Zuckerberg looking back at him.
Okay.
And so like, he sent me like this video of this guy talking about it. And the scary thing that I find about metaverses is that like it's been talked about and theorized for so long. But at the same time, though this may be the case where it's been talked about and people have seen it, it's every single time it's talked about in pop culture or in multimedia, it's always in a dystopian universe. Like Black Mirror did it in 2011 with the metaverse where you put like a little cube just like on like your temple of your head, like two cubes or something like that. And you'd enter this entire universe. You could be someone completely different. And I feel like the way they did it seems more logical and more realistic. Like you play games in the metaverse, like you can go like interact and meet people in the metaverse, but then like you live your day-to-day life and still in the real world, which I feel like sounds more logical. But at the same time, it scares me because it's like, yo, like this is a dystopian world where like they're trying, like Black Mirror have you seen it? Like Black Mirror?
I've seen like episodes of it where it's like, they predict like a very scary version of reality with tech.
Yeah. So it's pretty much like cautionary tales of like everything that technology could do in the world and like how it could affect our well-being and our lives moving forward. And it's like kind of really freaking scary to think about. And like, they do a lot of things. Like there was one where it was like, you rate everyone. That was one of my favorite episodes of it. It's one of the only ones I've seen too. Like you walk, like people walk around and like you do something, people will rate you. And then the higher rating you have, the higher social status you have. And I feel like something like the metaverse is going to be very similar. Like the higher level you are or the more experience points or the more like friends you have, like it's going to become its own social class inside of a virtual realm. And that's, that it worries me. Like what's the point of creating a metaverse if you can't fix the issues we have now?
Yeah. Well, and also like, the metaverse, like being online doesn't matter if like climate change is really bad or there's like something happening in the real world, like you can't escape that. So it feels really important that we take care of our real world issues too and don't just get immersed in the online world. And it seems like we're now at like this pivotal point where a lot of companies are really trying to amp up the metaverse thing. Like Microsoft also just talked about it this week. And I really hope that when we do this, it does not take over our world. Like I just think that that's going to be so important because as humans, like, we're drawn to things that like give us validation and social status and stuff. And if they do exactly what you're saying, Darcy, or like they give you status within the metaverse, I could see people spending time on there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just hope that the end goal for these companies is a net positive and not just a financial positive.
Oh, absolutely. But then you, like, I was thinking about this, right? So you've heard about Elon Musk's like his goal to move the Earth to Mars, like to move everyone on Earth. So he wants to colonize Mars, and that's cool. I'm so for it. Go colonize Mars. But don't do it with the hope and the dream of moving everyone there, because we can't save the Earth, because we can definitely save the Earth and still live here. It's just a matter of
totally.
We are lazy. We don't want to do it. Like, my roommate brought up the fact that, like, we have CO2 scrubbers, like, that it's a technology that exists and we use it. Why don't we build huge ones and put them into our atmosphere to scrub up the CO2 to help with climate change? Why? Well, because it's too expensive. Yet we'll spend all that money on research to go to Mars. So it's like, it's very much like we want to push the things in our world that, like, we want to push aside, like, our resources and just shove them to the side and be like, okay, cool. Like, we're done with this place. Let's move on. Whereas I think we should be, like, nourishing and trying to like help the planet for what it is. And like the metaverse is very much like that. Like, we're going to jump into this universe and forget about the problems here on Earth. Like Ready Player One, you end up living in a dystopian universe where like the world is like coming to an end and you're just like living the rest of your days out in this fake virtual reality.
Yeah. It scares me for sure. And I saw a tweet earlier, like about the Mars thing, and it was like, the Earth is like, we're made for us. Like the oxygen, like to go to Mars or something, it would take a lot of like kind of modifying the environment to work for us. Like, why do all of that? It's great, do it. But like, make sure the Earth is habitable, because that's like that's what we're meant. Like, that's what we evolved to be on. Which we just got deep here. But yeah, it feels so important to me that like when tech evolves, we don't forget our real world, because that's the thing that we're actually living in. Even if like the virtual world and the metaverse feels exciting, we have to like make sure. As humans, like the way we get our happiness is real world stuff. And I just hope that it doesn't become like an all encompassing thing.
Oh, absolutely. But I know it will though. Like if you think about, we were talking about NFTs last week and about how NFTs like, were like there, you can get like virtual art, right? And people are collecting these virtual art pieces or these virtual clothing pieces. And eventually it's all going to be integrated into the metaverse. Like you can have a huge virtual art collection. You could be an art virtual art collector and have all these NFTs set up, and you have like these real, like, well, not real, but I guess virtual art pieces that are worth millions. And like, you'd want to get into that game now, so you'd end up having like the coolest stuff early. And it's crazy because like that, like stuff like NFTs do create incentives for you to get more and more involved into stuff like this.
Yeah, dude, it's definitely going to be a really interesting thing. I was talking to a good friend this week all about NFTs, and he was talking about a lot of really cool stuff that I hadn't considered that goes beyond just like the pump and dump, like certain artwork NFT things that don't actually have inherent value. He was talking about a lot of things that did, like concert tickets, for example. And it was really fascinating. And I definitely think it's a topic that we should explore, maybe in another episode. So you guys should let us know on Twitter if you want to hear that, Digital Dive Pod. But dude, do you want to transition into some stuff we like this week?
Ooh, absolutely, absolutely. Jacqueline, what was your first stuff we like this week?
Ooh, I should have been much more prepared bringing us to the topic. Dude, can I throw it to you? And I'll think about mine.
Absolutely, you can. So my first stuff I like this week is this song called, I believe it's called What I Like by Mike. My roommate showed it to me. It's called What I Know by Mike. So Mike is actually, he was a very, very famous, well, not famous, but he had a couple like huge hits a couple years ago. I forgetting, like one of them was called Swish. And it was just a very popular song for a bit, very popular hip hop song. And he came back recently and he came out with like a whole new album, and it's like this really different, like lo-fi vibey, like R&B type beat. And I really liked it. So it was called What I Know by Mike.
Interesting. Okay. That's awesome. I will check that out. All right. My first one for this week is actually kind of untraditional, but it's Notion and Discord and Google Calendar, like as a trio, literally has been incredible. Like for my work, as I start adding people to the team and collaborating with people, that combination is like lethal. It's so good. You can, on Discord, you can chat with people and send files and have video chats. And then Google Calendar, you can schedule meetings. And then Notion connects with all three and you can be collaboratively working on stuff. It's just like the productivity masterclass, I feel like. And most of the services are completely free, which is really cool. So that's my first one. I've been using them for like hours every single day, and I'm stoked about them. Literally, Darsh and I are actually recording the podcast right now using Discord.
Yeah, it's become our saving grace. I didn't like Discord at first, but I kind of like it because it's like, it's so easy to be like, okay, yo, like jump into the voice channel, like let's have a chat.
Versus like sending a Zoom link.
Yeah. And then like the Zoom link too, like sometimes it doesn't work or something or the other. Mm-hmm. Like
the Discord password.
Discord has become a saving grace. I really appreciate Discord. And if you're listening to this, we accept sponsors. Anyway.
That would actually be an easy one, dude, because I like fully love their service.
Oh my God, Discord is fantastic. So, but yeah, that's actually a really, really good stuff you like this week. My second one's another song. It's an older one and it's country. So if you don't like country, don't hate me. I feel like a lot of my friends give me a lot of shit for listening to country as much as I do.
Dude, I love country music.
So it's called Not Good at Not by Morgan Wallen.
Oh, okay.
It's from one of his older albums called If I Know Me. And like, I didn't know the song existed. My roommate showed it to me. I absolutely love it. I've been listening to it on repeat. It's a kind of more sad. It's time of year. It's like, it's not sad time of year, but it's like the more like lo-fi, like vibey time of year. And so like, I kind of like it. It's really catchy and I've been really enjoying listening to it.
That's awesome. All right. My next one for this week is also a little bit like different than just like a normal recommendation. And it's something that I did this week actually called the Odyssey Plan. And I found it from a YouTuber named Unjaded Jade, who I love. You guys should definitely go check her out. And the Odyssey Plan, I actually think you'd be interested in this, Darsh. It's like a plan to figure out what you want to do with your life. So the way it works is you create three different plans. So the first plan that you do is called like, if I just continued on this path. And it's basically like, what would your life look like 5 years from now if you just continued on the path that you have right now? So for example, like for you, it may be like graduating college, then you just get a job at consulting or tech or something, and you work and you hang out with friends. Like, let's just say that was your plan. So if you continue on this exact path, what would your life look like 5 years from now? The second one is, what would your life look like if you did something different, right? So you did like a plan B, what would it look like 5 years from now? So maybe instead of doing a job in consulting, like you stay an extra year at college and you get an MBA or something like that. And the third plan is, what would your life look like 5 years from now if you didn't care about societal standards, right? Like, so there's no society pressure and you had unlimited funds and money. And then you compare all three plans and you try to take stuff from your third plan and integrate it into whichever one you're going to do. So oftentimes, like, if you look at plan A, which is like, if you just continue down the path, you may notice like something about that is unsatisfying or not challenging enough. And I just thought it was so smart. And it definitely made me think a lot about like what I actually want to be doing with my life and like what modifications I can make to my plan.
That's actually really, really cool. Where did you do this again? Like, where did you do it?
It's called the Odyssey Plan. And it's from this YouTuber. It's from the University of Stanford. But the YouTuber that like put me onto it is Unjaded Jade. I'll send you the video actually, because it's a pretty cool video.
I would absolutely love to check it out. And I think my last one for this week is going to be a TV show, and it's not a new TV show by any means. It's just one that I started rewatching, and I realized my love for it again, and I've always loved it. Suits. I'm a huge Suits fanatic. I've seen the series like maybe 8 or 9 times at this point. And I was rewatching the first season. I just remembered how good the first couple of seasons were and like how enjoyable they really, really, really were. And I miss it. I miss that level of quality content. It was, oh my goodness. The way that they were able to tell that story and the way that they were able to layer all these alternate storylines on top of everything, it was just like chef's kiss, like fantastic.
That's awesome. Yeah, dude, I've been looking for a new show to watch. So I'm actually going to check that out.
And you've never seen
it's
Suits?
It's filmed in Toronto, right? No, I've never seen it.
So, okay, so it's based in New York, but yeah, it's filmed in Toronto. And there was like multiple scenes that like I've been in those areas. It was filmed at the KPMG building downtown Toronto, which I always just thought was so cool. And there was like multiple scenes shot in like front of my grandma's house and stuff too. So like
Oh my God.
Yeah, so it's just like a really, really cool, I've always liked the show. I think a family friend of mine had like run into the guy who plays Lewis Litt on the street during like one of the shootings. So like, it's just really, really cool. And actually the second That's main awesome. Actor, he's from Toronto as well. Like the, one of the main actors, like one of the main co-stars, really? Patrick J. Adams. He's from Toronto.
When was it? When did they take it off air?
It was from 2011 to, it was like 9 seasons. So 2018, 2019.
Wow. So just like recently. Sick. Yeah. I'm definitely going to check that out.
Yeah. It's so good. You have to bear through the middle seasons though. They're not the greatest, but the first couple and the last couple are perfect. I loved them.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, sweet. I am definitely going to go check that out. And I think that will wrap up our episode. So thank you guys so much for listening to this one. Huge shout out to Adil Constantine for the incredible intro and outro music. We really appreciate you. And thank you to everyone that actually listened to this episode. If you made it this far, probably means you like the episode. So be sure to follow us on any podcast platform that you're listening. It actually like truly is like the only indicator to the algorithm aside from ratings that they should recommend the show to more people. It's like the fastest way to get us onto the tech chart. So thank you in advance for doing that. Really appreciate you. And I'll throw it to Darsh to lead us out.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode, guys. I really, really, really hope you guys enjoyed it. And if you did, again, just make sure to smash the follow button and then also the ratings. But on top of all of that, I also want to give a huge thank you to Adil Constantine, as always, for our intro and outro music. Man, you killed that intro and outro track. I absolutely love it. Thank you guys so much. And let us know what you guys think of this episode. We're trying something new. I definitely want to hear your thoughts on it. But with that all being said, we have new episodes coming every week, Mondays at 7 a.m. Central, 8 a.m. Eastern. Thanks so much for listening, guys. We'll catch you next week.